multi-dimensional. Flash drive.
So he's working with you at Mississippi State?
Yeah, you can download.
So slowly his task got redirected toward that, for that, especially over the last few years. So.
Yeah, I just code for the convenience.
Okay.
It's not for proof or anything.
Landing was all in jail.
Jack, thank you for coming.
Jack.
Do you know Jack? He's
know the name, but
yeah. So probably he wrote the buffer decoding routine, he is the data expert.
Okay.
So without him, for entire nation
wouldn't have any trouble at all.
That's something you're working on, right? I think you want to retire someday.
So there's a lot of publications on data assimilation in ASI, the Norwegian journal there.
In what journal?
TELUS.
Oh, TELUS, yeah.
So I think they have, it's almost like a special issue.
Swedish, actually.
Oh, Swedish, yeah. Okay. For some reason I thought.
Well, it's being published by a Danish publishing house, but the whole editorial board is run out of Stockholm University, so I don't know. I think it's considered a Swedish.
Okay.
In TELUS, I didn't
know. Yeah, just the most recent issue from March, which is before I came on. Okay. Several articles.
Who?
I have a list of them, some European, some...
I don't know about it.
There's one on the GFS local extended or ensemble, local ensemble common culture. What's the name? Suhyun Chu? Several authors there.
Are we expecting anybody else?
No, that's all.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, what's up? Do you have a presentation?
No, I don't, but you might have one.
I don't have a presentation, but I think Chris, basically we wanted to evaluate where we are and figure out the next steps on where to go. The main thing is that the regional...
I just brought your old presentation.
Okay.
Yeah, so, I actually have a slightly updated this would suffice for
ever. Okay. If you like to connect your computer, you can switch.
Actually, I have it on
the
flash drive.
Okay.
So is this where you have your ASI meetings?
No, no, it's a much bigger room up on the seventh floor. I mean, depending on the topic and the day, we may have sometimes 15, 20 people.
Okay.
So which one?
Okay, it's going to be under NASA or PC. The directory.
The folder.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
It's going to be that one. Yeah. the same information as was presented in the November meeting, with some modifications to our strategy of what we may do for the project.
First of all, when we got together and started working together on this, it was a very, I mean, it was the usual deal with the NASA Flight Sciences Program that
right.
they wanted quick turnaround, and we were trying to convince them that this would have to be a longer term effort.
Yes.
How's that going? Because by according to the initial plans, you should be out of business now already.
Well, sometime this summer, but we have told them that it needs to be extended by another year. Made a formal request.
Okay.
But some new contracting offices in NASA days, and they would not even look at the paperwork at least till 3 months before, so it's really sometime in May.
Okay, so you simply don't know where you are.
Don't know where we are yet, but the program managers are sympathetic to it.
And okay.
They have in principle agreed
okay.
that it will go on for another year.
And who is your program manager?
Craig Peterson, Ted Mason, actually, you know, he was diagnosed with cancer, so that's another thing where we didn't know who was in charge of that for
okay.
a good 6 months. Now I understand that they got the treatment and he's doing well and he's back more or less.
Okay.
He's visiting next week.
Okay.
So
you'll get an update on,
yes.
On where you want.
Right. So in his absence, it was Craig Peterson, and he didn't have any objections to it. He said he would recommend that.
Okay.
But the contracting officers yes. are the ones who are holding it up, not
yeah,
the technical managers.
Yeah. It's important, obviously,
mm-hmm.
and I'll be meeting with Jack Kay and Zeng Dali and some other NASA program managers
uh-huh.
on the 27th of May,
okay.
Where I'll present this broader picture of a national Aussie capability, and I'll mention your project
okay.
as well as an ingredient in that.
Okay, that'll be good. Some other people are aware of it. I don't know to what extent, like Bill LaPenta. And I haven't given him any recent updates yet, so we have more definite directions on where we are headed.
Yeah, okay.
And that's you were planning on meeting with him this week?
That did not happen.
Okay.
I was thinking of heading down there yesterday and today, actually, but that just didn't work out.
Okay.
We're still iterating via email, trying to find another set of dates, but realistically, I can't go down there until June at this point, because the rest of April and May is just completely packed with travel.
Mm-hmm.
He invited me to be on their sport science advisory committee, but I don't think that is meeting until November or December. Right?
Okay.
And, he wanted me to come down there before, and I agreed to that in principle. This week just didn't work out.
Okay. So
okay.
I will be going there again in 2 to 3 weeks time frame.
Okay.
I'll try to meet with Bill LaPenta and just keep him informed.
Okay. Okay, sorry Chris, I interrupted.
No problem. So like I said, this is a lot of the same information as from the November meeting. Of course, there have been some new developments, and what I've done is I've incorporated some of that into the plan that we have. So I'll go through it here. Of course, we're focused on the ATMS and CRIS sensors, and
is it the same thing?
Yeah, it's that's from November.
His old
one, so. Yeah, this is the old one. These are the old
ones. So obviously we're focused on these two feature sensors so we can improve temperature and humidity profiles. And of course, to do that, we need a mesoscale housing. Here's why I've made the modification. Very recently, I think it was just last week, there's a new version of WARP that had been released, and it has the capability of a global domain. And this is certainly not set, you know, this is open for discussion, but my thought was, and I talked over with Pat Fitzpatrick as well, is what can use this new global version of WRF for a mesoscale nature room, because as Tom Schlatter from KSRO had pointed out, there are a number of issues with using a limited area domain for a long duration nature room, particularly an issue with boundary conditions. And using a global domain would essentially eliminate, I think, that problem. So that's one change. And to accommodate that change, in order to conduct these sensitivity experiments, we could essentially switch the order of the models. Instead of using NN5 for the nature run and WRF for the sensitivity test, we could simply switch the two around, or we could add a question mark next to NN5. We could go with a different mesoscale model altogether. Again, another thing that's open for discussion. And of course, what we're looking at is some mesoscale weather events, in particular what we define as squall lines along the Gulf Coast of the United States.
So let me try to understand this. The global WRF is truly a global model.
That's how I understand it. Yeah.
So why would you? Oh, so what is the one-way nesting? What is it nested down to?
That goes into another proposed change that I address a little later. But,
okay.
But it would be that we would have the global domain and then a second nesting grid within that global domain.
But it would be a one-way nesting, so why would you need to do a different global model than the T511 nature one that sort of the rest of us had agreed to use as a baseline?
Well, the idea would be to use the T511 to initialize.
No, I understand that. But then you would take a different global model, the global WRF, and run off of those T511 initial conditions at some point. Why wouldn't you just use the T511 as it is and nest down from that directly?
I think that might go into some of the same boundary condition issues.
Okay.
Like I said, we'll be using a limited area
model. Okay.
Now, of course, that would depend on the intended time integration for the limited area model. If it's not a global grid, then I think we would have to limit the time integration so that any boundary conditions stemming from other parts of the world are not contaminating the grid. And if we use a global domain, then if we wanted to, we could afford to run it for a longer period of time, and then we can directly take that information into a nesting grid of course, the finer resolution, and then later we could conduct the sensitivity experiments that we could compare with this nested domain within the proposed nature run running over a global domain. And then, of course, we could compare the results of the mesoscale nature run from the sensitivity test and the ECMWF nature run data all together. Mm-hmm. Compare those.
This is the idea up for discussion, because
yeah.
The last time it was that, you know, there are issues with doing the other approach, and part of it we can say, what if we make the domain much larger than mm-hmm. our area of interest, but still we still don't know how long we can do that, even if we were to do it, how long an innovation will allow us to permit that. So we, that's what, you know, we are here to get some ideas on that.
Yeah.
Well, discuss the pros and cons of.
I don't really see exactly what you mean by global domain. You mean global, not a global mesoscale.
Well, it would be.
I mean, you're talking about sort of global boundary conditions for your.
No, it's global.
No, it's a global.
It's a global version of the WARF, but obviously not run at the highest resolution because we have to.
Right, and but the point is to provide the boundary conditions for the higher resolution area.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
So it's kind of a.
It's like a sophisticated boundary condition. That's
right.
Yeah,
right.
So that way.
It's to avoid having to.
Right.
Fake the boundary conditions from some other place. Yes.
And my question was simply why not use the boundary conditions that we already have in the T5 level. Mm-hmm.
Well, in the boundary conditions, this global model is only one way. In other words, it's only feeding information into the higher resolution domain.
Right.
So there's no reason not to use, for instance, a global nature run or something canned.
There's some specific parameter may not be there in T511.
Some parameter for the boundary.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Right,
okay. Okay.
That's conceivable.
Okay.
What kind of parameter?
You need to focus on this.
Well, if that's the case. I mean, you're talking as if there is some problem using the T511 nature run other than a missing parameter. As if something you referred to Tom Schlatter saying something that wouldn't work or something?
Yeah, I talked with him a couple of times. Once, of course, during the November meeting, and then I had an opportunity to talk with him at the AMS meeting as well. And he suggested, and I'm going by his experience, that if we use, I mean, we have, I can understand that we need to address the boundary condition problem, and this appears to be, I mean, the newest and potentially the best way to.
Well, I mean, I from what I recall about what Tom said concerning canned boundary conditions and boundary conditions feeding one-way boundary conditions feeding these sensitivity tests in the mesoscale domains was that. After, I don't know, 5 or 10 days, you're basically swamped with the boundary condition.
Right.
And your sensitivity is driven by that.
Mm-hmm.
But that has nothing to do with the nature of it.
That doesn't have anything to do with where the boundary conditions came from. It doesn't depend.
Exactly. Exactly.
But it's the generic difficulty in making limited area OSSIs. And it's actually paralleled by the experience from real life. Many of the short-term weather prediction jobs don't do data simulation at all. They live off the boundary conditions quite happily.
Right. Yeah.
So that tells you that it's damn difficult to isolate the sensitivity to the observations in there.
Mm.
Now, you sort of raised the bar for your ambitions a little bit because they will ultimately be sensitive to observations as we progress in sophistication, and that's what you're trying to analyze here. It's not completely trivial.
Yes.
Yeah, this we're kind of learning as we go. I think, with this as well.
And just from an overall project or capability point of view, it would be, I think, politically enormously preferable if you could use the EZWF nature on the same as the rest of it. At the other time, at the same time, I understand, or I think that part of that there may be a user constituency behind the global WARF who would like to see that used also, but that's just not my baby. I mean,
mm-hmm.
We're trying to build this national coalition here that to some extent is kept together by the analysis, by the procurement and the analysis of the EZWF nature run and the observation simulation that Jack and others have done.
Okay.
So I think it would be easier for us if we. We let that sort of be the glue of the effort.
Yeah. I think that's our preferred approach. Yes. I mean, that's our original proposal, and we still can go ahead. But it is meanwhile there was, if we were to do it, there were other criticisms from the OSSI community. So we obviously it's clear that we cannot satisfy everybody's concerns. Well, I mean, we have to sometimes
you have basically two problems. You know, you have a boundary condition problem. You need them from somewhere, and you have your mesoscale domain as a separate issue. I mean, you can proceed on sort of on parallel tracks, you know, along those lines. You have a global boundary condition with the nature run, with the European center nature run, which would allow you to work with the mesoscale domain as is, let's say. And there's no reason you can't look at producing another boundary condition to see if what the sensitivity or
if I understand Chris correctly, or sort of my own naive take on the regional losses is that within the boundary conditions, you are what you would define as a nature run would be some kind of high resolution model that's nested within the nature run and running its own free running simulations on the area that you're interested in, and then you can nest a different model in there to use the assimilation experiment, so you don't have this identical twin experiment. Is that what you wanted to do?
Well, yeah. Having the second model, of course, would any similarities.
You would still have the similarity that's embedded in the boundary conditions. There's no easy way, at least not in my mind, to have different sets of boundary conditions, but you could have different models nested within it. One would be nature, or your defined nature, and the other one would be the experimental model.
That's actually something I had in mind, that approach. Yeah. So one uses the mesoscale nature run, the other using the ECMWF nature running. One mesoscale model using one and the other.
So you would let them use different boundary conditions. That would be tough because you would actually be forcing them apart. There would be no way for you to hammer the system with enough information to make them look alike because the impact of the boundary conditions is so strong. And if you use ECMWF boundary conditions on one experiment and global WARF on the other, it's guaranteed that they'll diverge. They won't look alike.
We can't compare.
You can't compare them.
No, I mean
it would be you would actually underestimate the impact of the observations because the boundary conditions would be pulling them apart. So you would have to dump an enormous amount of observations into the system to try to counteract that. It's one thing to say okay, you're being unrealistically kind to the system by keeping the boundary conditions the same both in the nature run and in the experiment, but to deliberately make the boundary conditions different.
Along these lines. I mean, the whole theory of the OSSI is sort of, test out your imperfect scenarios in a perfect world. The nature run is perfect by definition. You have a perfect boundary condition, and you initialize your mesoscale model for a free run from using that perfect boundary condition, and you end up with a perfect forecast or a perfect atmosphere in your high-resolution domain. Right. That's your nature run. Perfect boundary conditions, perfect model run. Okay. You may want to conduct an OSSI with an imperfect boundary condition. In other words, a nature run perturbed by synthetic observations. In other words, let's just say you used your European center T-Wolf 511 for your boundary condition. And then somewhere else, or you produce a simulated, you take that nature run, you extract observations, and you run assimilation systems. Now you have another atmosphere that's imperfect. That's your, because you've extracted observations, you've used an analysis system, you assigned errors to the observations, and so on. So you run that, and you produce an analog to the perfect nature run that is an imperfect atmosphere based on our best ability to simulate that perfect world. If you use those for boundary conditions, for your sensitivity test, then you would have sort of complete the thought in your mesoscale OSSI. You would be driving the perfect world and the imperfect world with two different boundary conditions, but they're related. They're related in the sense that the imperfection is caused by just the imperfection of the analysis programs and the observation errors that created that imperfect boundary condition. Otherwise, they were extracted from the perfect world. You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. So then you would have, that would complete the thought. That would follow the theory of the ASI right down into the smaller scales inside your nested domain.
There's a way of perturbing, if you will, the I'll just write. Never mind. It's been here for a while.
That's fine. I have created myself a nice multi-color pen.
That's the imperfect world. Yeah.
If this is the global domain, then you could, in your nature run, you could nest a model into it, in whatever area you want, and run your simulation for however many days you want. You could then, for your experiment, think of something that is even further inside. And you could use the boundary conditions of the true nature run, and what would be created by this intermediate run would be slightly different because of the outer nesting here. But it would be related to the same physiological situation. Mm-hmm. It would be a way of creating those perturbed boundary conditions mm-hmm. that you're talking mm-hmm. about, I think. Mm-hmm. So that would allow you to try to, with this inner nesting here, create what you defined as the truth in the outer nesting from situations that are very closely related, but not identical. Do you follow the logic here?
Yes.
Does that make sense to you?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this would be a new methodology. I don't think anybody has done this before. The two models could even be the same. That would be. That would actually simplify your experiment, your setup, and your expectation. You could also use different models, but that's sort of one level of ambition beyond. So, just to clarify here, the nature run would be defined by this nesting here. Once you do the experiment, you forget about that. And uh-huh. you nest this directly. This is your experimental setup, but you use this outer nesting as the truth that you verify against that you're trying to get at.
Mm-hmm.
I think so. The line of thought would not track very far from what we've been.
Okay.
Looking. I mean, that's certainly.
Okay.
So one for the boundary for the mesoscale nature, one for the symmetrical.
The outer would be the nature one. That would define your truth. And the inner would nest not into the outer, but directly to the nature one. But that would be your experimental land.
Oh, okay.
So how long, what a period do you think we can...
We don't know. The goal of this exercise is to allow us to create something that gets out of this 4 to 6 hour time period. That's really the most that you can claim to be unaffected by.
See, I think you can. I think there's two time scales or levels you have to think about. One is, I think you can do your simulation for a year. Mm-hmm. I mean, a simulation is an everyday kind of thing. It's the length of the forecast that you're evaluating think is limited by your domain
mm-hmm.
and by the fact that you're constantly feeding data in from around the edges.
I mean, the beauty of the standard ASI setup that we have in the global is that you can run your simulation for, as Jack says, a year or 2 years.
Right.
Or
well, we have a year of nature.
I'm saying. But there's nothing fundamentally in the methodology that limits us to anything.
No, that's right. That's right.
We typically like to do 4 to 6 week experiments because that's kind of that mimics what we do in operational practice. Nobody's willing to look at anything unless there's at least 30 days of data behind it.
Okay.
And a month and a half is generally considered there. And the goal of this exercise is to see, can we come up with a scenario for mesoscale ASIs that will allow you to stack a month worth of experiments? Because Otherwise, it's going to be difficult for you to obtain statistical credibility. If you have something that with the glue and duct tape is held together so that you can do a 4, 5, 6 day experiment, that isn't going to cut it. Nobody in the satellite agencies, or certainly nobody in the input programs, will pay any attention.
Yes. Okay.
But I mean, if you're looking for improvements in a 3 day forecast, then you want to do a number of 3 day forecasts.
Yeah. Yes.
A month, 2 months, six months, whatever.
Yes.
A season, you know,
yes.
Two seasons to demonstrate sensitivity.
In this case, what would be, okay, now going back to the goal, I mean, what is the forecast improvement that ideally we want to demonstrate? How long is it, 3 hours, 6 hours?
It depends on, I mean, you actually, maybe not, you two and Pat will know more about the terminology of the stuff that you want to look at, and I assume you have some ties to the Weather Service field offices. I mean, they'll know what they're after. They know what they're hoping to see. I'm not a mesoscale model or forecast.
That's why I would like to talk to Bill LaPenta, because they have the
connection. Yeah, that's exactly their that's their goal. Their goal is to feed research into exactly the National Weather Service regional office down there. So he's your guy.
Okay.
When you look at your plan, you try to see the impact from ATMS CRIS. It's a polar orbiting satellite. You have only twice a day measurements of what kind of impact it can demonstrate.
Well, it's so high resolution, though.
So just the high resolution model.
What is it, a kilometer or?
But
something
to me, I think I made the same comment when I first heard about the claims for this. But to me, it doesn't really matter. If we can develop this capability, if we can between us cook up a strategy for how to do this, then we'll have done something that it feeds directly into your GOES-R request from Mary Kisa.
Okay.
And I think this is much, much more relevant and much more interesting to GOES-R, actually. But that's just not where the request or the money came from initially.
Yeah. Okay. This is David.
Nice to meet you.
Hello. So, this here.
So, if we were to refine our experimental design a little better, maybe that's one of the things that we can do that in terms of saying defining the NESS, what kind of resolution we want to look at. Temporally, we've seen that we would attempt to do at least 45 days.
That would be good. And how much forecast do you need? That has to mimic whatever they're doing. Are they doing looking at 24 or 36 hour forecasts? I don't know, but my guess is that it's that time frame. That's of relevance to it.
This just kind of illustrates what I was talking about earlier. Again, this is not set. It's just an idea about how we might go proceed given some changes to what's available to us. Here I list 14 kilometers being the resolution of the sensor because there's one of those. Cross-track resolution is 14 kilometers. Vertical resolution is 3, I don't choose 14 necessarily because that's this number. It's just coincidence that I have.
Okay. Yeah, stop on this slide a little bit, because this is really what we're talking about. So here you're just describing the nature run. So you would envisage a global Wharf model with a regional Wharf nested into it that is centered over the Gulf, and you will use the ESMWF nature run just for initial conditions to kick this this baby off, and let it run for how long?
For the global domain, using about 40 kilometer resolution.
You're running 3 weeks there, 3 weeks plus 3 weeks, or two, actually it's 2 weeks plus 2 weeks.
Basically, just several days before the onset of the K case events I'm looking at, which are...
Okay, just from sort of standard forecast impact considerations, it's not going to let you build enough of a statistical sample.
Is that the case you showed from T799 example?
That's the reduced resolution. I just last week I received the NASA portal account, so I wasn't able to update these.
Then you have to start from T799 engine, not from T511.
The phenomenology is different, and there's another caveat. If you start your nature run, say a week or two ahead of this event, and you use a different model, there's absolutely no guarantee. It's
right.
There's not even any likelihood that you're going to see that same swallow line.
Yes.
The same is true with if you nest within it. There's no guarantee that you see that swallow line in that. So you almost have to just, so in an abstract sense, which is the way we did it here. We had meetings up on the seventh floor where we were. Where we were setting the requirements for the nature run, and we couldn't say anything about we want a hurricane that looks like Katrina. I mean, we just had to make a decision on what year's SST did we want to feed into it, what resolution would we like, and what kind of output would we like, and then you take whatever you get.
Comes, yeah.
And you have to do the same here. I think you have to do your nature run first.
See what
it's like. Then you go look for the squall lines.
It's okay because I mean the actual nature run itself is going to be the one that's inside the high resolution domain. Whatever is in there. Yeah, it may not be what's in the T511
right.
at all.
But if you're lucky and if the models are good and if that's a characteristic of your region for that season, chances are that you will see squall lines.
Right.
Just like we saw pretty good hurricanes in the nature run, but we couldn't specify that up front.
Yeah, if you have a decent model and you have realistic or plausible boundary conditions, mm-hmm. you should get response.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you're planning on sort of anecdotal case, looking at cases.
Well, certainly we wouldn't necessarily expect that these cases would show up in a prolonged mesoscale nature run using global warming.
Wouldn't. Why not?
Well, I mean, not obviously not identical to what's here.
No, not identical. But you would probably see something.
These are real cases here. These are in the T799.
These are from the T799.
I see. Okay.
So here you just present the two weak cases for the mesoscale natural. You use mesoscale dwarf. Produce two weak cases for the mesoscale natural.
Well, it's not even produced. Anyway. These are tentative plants, though, right? And you haven't actually done what you said on the previous slide, or have you?
Not yet.
No. Okay.
This global warp was released just this week.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, there is a question of spin up. I mean, it takes you need the model to sort of come to some equilibrium, which takes I don't know different times.
You actually need a
couple of weeks.
Yeah,
you need it to forget about the boundary.
Yeah, right. You need to forget it. That's right.
So it almost doesn't make sense to even start from these MWF initial conditions. Why would you do that?
Right.
Because you need to run as long enough that it has forgotten them.
Right.
Because it'll be out of balance with the model.
Right. I mean, you need to. Well, let's forget about the problem of creating a nature run. Just talk about having one.
Okay.
And at whatever scale you want. And you know, so and you extract data out of that nature run, and then you want to run sensitivity tests. So then the question is, what do you start with? What initial state do you start your sensitivity test, your imperfect world? You know, in our case, we always the nature run started at some point from the real world, some real analysis. We start our perfect world from an imperfect. And then we let it evolve in its own way, and we call it perfect. And we start our sensitivity experiments from the same point. But we have to, you know, where we extract data from the perfect world, we add errors and so on and so forth. We go back to that original initial condition, and we start an assimilation, where we assimilate the extracted data. But it takes 2 weeks for the model to sort of like Lars said, forget about
yes.
the the perfect initial condition and so on. Before we even look at sensitivity.
Yes.
Because all of a sudden now, instead of the model using real data predicting the real atmosphere, which it's used to, it's using data that comes from another model. So now all of a sudden it's assimilating information about what another model did, and it's actually trying to track that other model. And that creates all kinds of noise because the two models have different biases, they have different characteristics. There's a lot of shake, there's a lot of jumping around before that model sort of equilibrates to the prediction from the other model. So you have to think about that.
Yeah, people try not to think about the problem of the lateral boundary condition, but I think it's poorly evaluated. I couldn't get a good answer from people who doesn't want to think about it, and one group of people just stay away from the lateral. So.
Well, I mean, our experience shows that you get noisy. The first 2 weeks, very noisy. All kinds of strange things are happening while the assimilation of the model are trying to figure out what it's trying to, what kind of world it's in.
Right.
Because now it's trying to predict another model, which is essentially different than what it usually does, what it's been developed for and what it's been tuned for. So that's something else you have to think about, that lead time. So you need your nature run probably a month. You need 2 weeks.
So another thing to
lead time and 2 weeks for looking at.
T79 nature starting T511. The transition was very smooth when we looked at. But now REST is finding that the first hurricane doesn't look good. Then second hurricane looks a lot better, which appears in the middle of the T799 nature run. So we are wondering why first hurricane doesn't look good.
Is that the one that goes the wrong way?
Oh no, not that. But it just too broad, and it doesn't look like hurricane. So because that hurricane was already started in the T511.
Okay. So you have something that's already developed, and you give it to a different model.
It's just the same model, different resolution. Didn't develop quite correctly. But another hurricane which appeared middle of the period looks much better.
Then there's another hurricane in that high resolution one that Oreste showed, the track plotted on against the tracks for the last 400 years or so.
Oh, this is the one that's all over the East and finally hits Spain and France.
Well, it's not the one that hit Spain. No. This is that was actually in the T511, which looks really great. I mean, the one that hit Spain, there's actually one that did that a couple of years ago.
Yeah, that's what's fun.
He showed another one. I don't think you were there that day.
Okay.
But in the the high resolution T799, the hurricanes were disappointing. There were much less of them. There was only one instead of like 10 in the same period that were interesting. And there was one that actually followed a track that no hurricane in 400 years of tracking had ever gone. So it looks like something's wrong.
Okay.
It looks like something's not.
Tell it to the media, they'll say it's global warming.
The European Center and the experience, at least when they moved to T511 to T799, the hurricane focus did improve. Then they have to think about what made improve. Eric is investigating right now.
Though, this is a free run. This is not a simulation.
It could be data simulation that improves it. As Jack said, this is a free run.
Yeah, they could have improved the high-resolution assimilation and somehow...
I'm sure they did.
Other things they did, when they moved from T511 to T799, they increased the vertical resolution. But our T511 nature and already 91 level high resolution vertical.
Okay, so there could be a mismatch between the horizontal and the vertical.
We have a
higher the T511 we have is the same vertical resolution as the 799.
So our T511 nature run is that resolution European Center has never used.
Okay.
When they were using T511,
Could be that that's the winning combination.
That doesn't explain why the T511 is better than the 799,
no,
except maybe it suggests the 799 should have more vertical levels too.
Yeah. So
should have 190 levels.
To
might
reach the T5-1191 level is doing maybe just they reduce the resolution and keep the particle and may improve the focus. So that's kind of things. And maybe they can improve the physics a little bit and they can fix it, the program, once they know the program. But so another thing that I'm pointing out, the world model, it just released last week. T799 model has been tested for one or two years before they implemented.
That's a very good point. You would lose all the brand name credibility of the ECMWF T511H1 to go after something that's a research project that's completely untested.
So
that
just released last week.
Yeah.
Is not something.
That's.
They just want to justify the money they received, right? So that's not the kind of model we want to use for.
So going back to the drawing board on what you suggested, how could we realistically, you know, this scenario I'm proceeding in terms of the domain, and how large to this intermediate nature running to be?
Well, it sounds as if what you're looking at is really just the Gulf. So you could define an inner nest that just covers the Gulf, and let that be your experimental. And then I don't know how high resolution. I know that the PAC has run some stuff at very high resolution, just over the Gulf.
Well, there's two issues. How do you make the nature run?
Yeah, right.
How do you make your perfect world? Mm-hmm. And then how do you perturb the boundary in your imperfect world? Two questions that really need focus, I think. And the simple way to make the nature
in,
the,
in this scenario here, they would already be perturbed, right?
Well, how are you suggesting they make the perfect world, the nature run for the high
this
resolution?
This is they run.
They make a sort of a double nest.
Yeah, they run this. Let's call it the outer nest here, within the EC nature run. This is the EC nature run.
Yeah.
For a month, for 6 weeks, or whatever it is, and then the experiment, and the perfect world is defined by this.
I see.
Once you do the experiment, you forget about this. You nest this directly into the EC nature run.
And so you extract data out of this.
Yeah, so yes.
You extract your data out
of
this.
And then once you nest this directly into the EC nature run, those boundary conditions will be, by definition, perturbed with respect to the boundary conditions that are created by.
With respect to the nature, the EC nature run.
With respect to the nature run defined by this. Because this one here will sort of implicitly have created boundaries.
Are you assimilating data in that?
No, the nature run is here. The nature run is a nature run. It runs freely within this one here. It's only forced by the boundaries.
Okay.
But you can extract.
Now you have your perfect world. So what do you do for your?
So now you extract data from this whole area here.
Right.
And then you run your data assimilation experiment. Only with this inner nested here, but it's not nested into this, it's nested directly into this.
Mm.
So the boundary conditions that it sees come from out here, but what you're comparing it with comes from this nature run here. So those, there will be an opinion on the boundary
conditions. Right, that sort of goes the opposite way, but I can see the point.
That come from here, the experiment, but they come from here in the perfect world.
Yeah.
So they will be perturbed by definition.
Right, except they are the perfect world from the point of view of the data, but it's a moot point. Since you're sort of doing the reverse on the way I usually think about it, but it's the same. You end up with the same thing.
You do have moderately perturbed boundary conditions, and the beauty of this is that you can play with how perturbed you want them. I mean, and how big is this gap here?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If you keep them very close, there will be a very small difference between the boundary conditions. But I would run this ideal world here for 6 weeks and use the last month for an experimental period, and you would have to play around with this mismatch here. But this would allow you to completely mimic the offsets that we have, that you have that you have a data simulation experiment that you can run day in and day out, and you have a perfect work that you can compare and validate against.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I strongly insist you start with our nature before I start from mesoscale nature. Mm-hmm. Because from the previous experience on MFSL.
Yeah, I think that there's both.
They spend all the time just producing nature run.
There's a political advantage to this, and there's a scientific advantage also. I think we will be losing touch with each other's effort if you want to go down the route of using a different nature run. And you would have to do that because. It looks very nice on paper that you would start it out from the ECMWF nature one, but you would realistically have to run long enough to that. It wouldn't matter what you started from.
Lose the initial memory. Yeah. So
there might be a computational advantage if we base it on the EC nature run as opposed to running our own. I mean, that would probably save time for the project.
Yeah, other thing is you are just alarmed by high resolution data, 40 kilometer, 1 kilometer, or that kind of. But what kind of resolution actually used for data simulation? You want this data simulation?
Right. That's
well. And what about the conventional observations?
Yes, that's also need to be.
I mean, can we all use common? I mean, one of the thoughts here was that we would generate a set of data from the nature run that. Could be sort of common currency.
Yes.
If you're using the same nature run, you can use the same radius arms, for instance, and so on.
That would be to your advantage because you wouldn't have to worry about that. You're going to have your hands full with simulating ATMS and CRISS as it is,
right.
Because we're not going to take care of that at that resolution, I don't think. But a lot of the other work is being done, has been done, will be done, irrespective of you. So you
I mean, after all, in the real world, it's the same radius arms.
Yeah. Yeah.
For example.
So that simulated radius arms and other observations would really come from the ECMWF. We're going to throw away that intermediate one. That's purely for the boundary conditions. Is that right?
We would have to think about that, whether what we would simulate it on, whether you would. That's actually a good question. Would we not?
Yeah, it's. I mean, this is. It's. Again, I'm a little confused.
He's hiding.
Hey.
Hi.
And he.
This is satellite radio simulation.
Okay.
Just to. He knows how to that kind of thing. Okay. And other things. Ron Erico is simulating that radiance data. The basic data set, and we are doing as well, but we are trying to simulate a very thin data. We try to use footprint, only footprint which use operation. That's going to be...
Well, that's for our particular experiment.
Yeah,
I mean, you can simulate any footprint you want.
So we can just run through the whole, we can simulate the whole.
It has
time.
To do with calibration, really,
yeah.
and also making tests that are comparable to our global system.
So right. That would be probably less than 1%, probably 0.1% of actual footprint. And Ron Erico is tried to simulate the complete data set so we can test the thinning algorithm. But that is not complete footprint either. He ended up doing a lot of thinning because he realized we can't afford it. So it's when you simulate the GOATS R data, the GOATS data, that was 60 kilometers, right?
Yeah.
That is quite
about 10 times less than the observed.
Yeah, that is quite
big. I'm not sure you're following what Michiko's talking about. We have, in our system, we take the full resolution satellite data, mm-hmm. whatever satellite it is,
yeah.
and we thin it
yes.
a lot. And Michiko's talking about we're only simulating, we have a record of that thinning. Mm-hmm. So we take that record and we we simulate only the footprints that were actually assimilated
that we will assimilate
in our operational
Whereas you,
system.
You would presumably need
yeah.
more data.
See, you would extract. You know, yes. I think in under this, some scenario like this, you can use radius. You can use a common set of radiosondes and ships and maybe surface data.
Right.
But any of the high resolution data that you're actually testing, mm-hmm. I think you have to extract yourself from the high resolution part of your nature run.
From the one with
yeah.
we have in the middle.
I mean, this part that you know you're going to
yes.
make here that's perfect.
Right.
Right. You're going to run a free forecast inside here to
yes.
make a perfect. Region here
right.
to compare your sensitivity test with, and any of your high-resolution data that you're testing sensitivity, I think you have to extract from that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas other data that you know you can probably use the common set.
Yes.
So what we, for the global side, what we do is very very thin data.
Yes.
Even for the complete.
I think it's what is it, Dave? It's like 1 degree, or is it less than that? 2 degrees. What's the thinning? You told us 100 kilometers, 180 kilometers.
Oh, that was at the last meeting.
Yeah,
that was Jim
yeah.
Jones.
Jim,
I think he's. I think that's what he said.
140
yeah.
kilometers per hour.
But that's from a global yeah. modeling perspective.
Yeah.
Well, that we take the satellites themselves, which are
yes.
you know the HERS or something is 40 kilometers apart or something
yeah.
along the tracks, and we thin that
thin
out.
Thin that. It's. Part
of the goal with having this joint exercise is that if we have the capability and they have the requirement to have some of this simulated at a higher resolution, we should do this. For
oh, I think we can do it. The reason
then,
we're
yeah.
we're approaching it this way
yeah.
is because we need to calibrate the system.
Yeah.
We need to make it run just like operations.
Yeah.
And so
right.
we have to use just the same set of data
exactly.
to do that.
But,
so that's the calibration.
Yes.
The phase.
But they should not be duplicating this the capabilities to simulate HERS and AMSU and AIRS and IASI and all
right.
that. Because we have that. They should
right.
just.
Well, they may want to demonstrate sensitivity to the higher resolution data
exactly.
inside their high resolution
but they
domain.
They should have us do those simulations.
If we've done the thin simulation. And got that worked out, we can do
yeah.
the high resolution.
Because that means that Hai Bing or Ron
yeah.
or whoever
yeah.
Has
just a matter
the ability
of,
to
right, we do it
radiances.
One footprint at
yeah.
a time. So
mm-hmm.
we can do 1,000 footprints or 1,000,000 footprints. It doesn't matter.
Yes, exactly.
So if you do a little bit higher resolution than Ronda produced, there are lots of slope still left just using our global nature run. That's what I'm trying to say. Before you start doing this, there's a big gap between what you're proposing and what we are trying to do. So that area, you still can do a lot of work before you begin.
That's before we get to the data simulation.
Before you produce mesoscale nature. So you can just do nesting global assimilation, mesoscale assimilation, the global model.
Mm-hmm.
Using T79
yes.
and H1, you can do a lot of things. And you are just saying, oh, but I'm getting 1 kilometer resolution data, but that's not the kind of information we are getting from 1 kilometer resolution.
Well, the satellite sensor, we just have this new capability. You can calculate the projected surface area, whatever
uh-huh.
high resolution model you are running, you can calculate the actual area, how many grids you need to
yes.
get the useless information to do the average or simulate each individual grid point doing at the satellite sensor level to do the average. There are several ways to do this. You can average the profile first, or you can do the radiance average at the
sensor.
Yeah, the sensor.
Yeah.
So. We have this footprint area you can calculate. I think
mm-hmm.
John Dover is now started using that in the GSI.
In terms of
averaging
instead of thinning, you mean? Or
you can physically calculate the area.
We want to do whatever they do in order to make side-by-side runs.
Right.
So, but and as I understand it, in 2005, basically, it was thinning.
Yeah,
they just thinned. They just
thinning.
Picked out.
Now they want to
elaborate on that. That's fine. I mean,
yeah.
But for our purposes, we have to duplicate what they did in order to calibrate our system.
But averaging of...
Once we calibrate our system, then we can get test sensitivity to other techniques, for instance.
A lot less than 1 kilometer.
Right.
So, instrument people are believing, oh, if it's 1 kilometer, we can get 1 kilometer resolution, you can see a tornado, but it's not.
The thumb instrument is quite important. You have a sensor, you know, spatial distribution function, right? Mm-hmm. You know, infrared, we have it's a sensor pointing, you know, function you can use. Microwave, you have some antenna pattern. Mm-hmm. You know, all this is being digitized.
Yes.
So when you want to do this, it's a trick, it's easy. You have a weighted, you know, you have how many pixels. Mm-hmm. The field of view.
Yes.
You put the weighting function, this antenna pattern, you know, to pick up the weights. It's mm-hmm. a fairly straightforward.
Yeah.
I think that's the future. Probably GSI can test it. The system. This is a new really transfer component. You know. I think the problem is it's already tested. One for ATM.
Oh, you're talking about the, because we're going to be doing everything instead of that?
Yeah.
So that's an area where we need help. That's why
in terms that's why you have
yes.
people
simulating those observations.
Really working,
yes.
Working together.
So what, so you can tell what kind of actual resolution we can get out of this high resolution.
Right.
That's
right.
That's it.
From high resolution
the distance
to
of the
lower. This high resolution to low resolution is very easy.
The conference contains less than 3 participants at this time. If you would like to continue, press star 1 now, or the conference will be terminated.
Is anybody on the phone?
Said 3.
Less than 3. I don't know if that means 2 or 0.
Is anybody on the phone?
It sounds like it.
Who's on the phone?
I thought it's Pat might call him.
I'm not sure.
He didn't say if he would or not. But if anybody would, it would be Pat.
And coming to our assimilation strategy also, I think when we talked about instead of assimilating radiances, we'd go and assimilate the retrieve for the purposes of this RC, that we would assimilate the retrieve, assimilate a product then. Or should we rethink about trying to simulate the radiance?
It depends on whatever the target user would do. Because as Jack said just a couple of minutes ago, what we do in the RC is we try to closely mimic whatever NCEP does.
Okay.
Because if we see impact using a different methodology, the immediate comeback is, but that's not how we do business.
Yes.
So it has no value. So do whatever is being done in the NAM, if that's your target application or the
that's radiance assimilation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that will be radiance.
3D
bar. Will be radiance.
Yeah.
So we have to.
We also
the WRF has CRTM radiance assimilation
yeah,
capabilities now.
Yeah. Okay.
If this has any relevant for future goes on, let's see, has. I'm not sure whether we're gonna. Just stick on radiance and this high tempo information will bring humongous data sets.
Yes.
You know, this is another test
yeah.
that may think about using retrieval.
But retrievers is easy.
Yeah.
It's the radiance that's difficult. So if you can do that, you can do everything.
So then there is also the dimensionality reduction that you need to take care of in the spectral space. For simulation, is that something which need to be done a priori? Before I don't know the assimilation aspects of 3D WAR, how it is implemented. Because there's going to be a lot of redundant information spectrally.
Well, I mean that I think they do the same kind of thinning.
Okay.
To sort of, you know, partially address the problem.
Okay.
Redundant information and correlated
spectrally,
information.
Yes.
You know, basically the approach has been, at least up till now, you know, somehow or another, you have to reduce the noise by thinning the data or averaging it or something. And I mean, in the 2005 framework, it was thinning, basically just sort of using some way or other to figure out well the clearest soundings or something, and in a you know 150 kilometer grid or something like that, whatever was consistent with the resolution of the assimilation model.
That's spatially, but then the same problem exists also spectrally when we have hundreds of.
You mean like with errors or something?
Right.
So well, okay, you know what they did with errors. There's 3,000 channels, so they reduced it by a factor of 10.
You don't have to worry about that. You just live with whatever data, whatever channel selection the operation
is. Yeah, it's the same thinning. Yeah. It's the same thinning. It's just vertically instead of...
Spectrally.
I mean, spectrally instead of, for, you know, spatially.
What is your data assimilation system?
Well, if we are... again, that comes back to whether we... If we are going to assimilate radiances, then we need to go with 3D WAR or whatever is available, which would work with WAR. So that's.
Do you have the GSI available to you?
We don't have GSI yet. Okay. So does that?
There's just something. Are you going to work with the ESRM group? They are working on regional model.
Yeah, they have GSI.
But does the NCAD work 3D VAR? They will have similar radiance simulation capability. That's what they are working on.
Yeah, the WARF-1.
Yeah,
that'll have radiance assimilation. Either one of them will have radiance assimilation capabilities.
From the project point of view, we had not specified whether we're going to mimic exactly what ANSEP is doing, but I think there are advantages.
ANSEP is just a GSI for regional IMAP.
Okay.
The same system.
There are advantages in terms of the impact that you would have. I mean, if the goal of this whole exercise is to have impact on decisions that will be made with respect to ATMS and CRIS, you have a lot better chance if you mimic what ANSEP does rather than if you cook your own data simulation system.
Okay. Do you know what sports, you know, for us, I think that's the one we were looking to at that time in terms of...
It's probably better if you talk to Bill Apenta about that, because I haven't been down there yet. I've talked to Bill only, you know, like in the corridor at the AMS meeting, so we haven't had a detailed technical discussion.
So what kind of computer do you
have? We have a computational facility is not a problem. We have a Linux cluster, which is about...
They have a huge building.
Yeah, pretty huge.
Computers, that's all I can say. There's RAM.
We have
RAM.
1,000 nodes, well, basically... 500 nodes for process, so essentially 2,000 processors on the Linux. Then we also just got a shared memory machine, handover from a DoD high performance center, which has 496.
So Linux, then ESRL and the NASA use Linux cluster. So whatever they have, it's easy to import.
Yes.
Do you do data assimilation? You have a data assimilation project?
In the past, they had worked with NCAR and have you, there are actually two groups, even though Chris and I are here, and focused on a different set of projects in a different location there. Have you guys started using data simulation yet?
I had not had a direct involvement, but I have some awareness.
I mean, that's an important component of all this.
So yes, that this would be, to my knowledge, the first project where we do in-house data simulation. Earlier, there was hand-holding from NCAR. So that was
One of the first things you have to do is to do a real case.
Yeah.
With real data, you have something to compare to.
You have to have a data simulation system that works because.
Which is 3D WAR, which is what you did in the squall line simulation. So how much of the hand-holding was done, I don't have a feel for it yet, but they have done.
I think there was some great reliance on what NCAR had generated for them. There was an attempt, I think, to try to do some of this assimilation in-house, but I think we deferred most of that.
Okay. So we have experience, not a long track record of that experience.
Well, I mean, it depends on, you know, again, I think it's an important part of this is to be able to calibrate your system against, you know, a sort of an analog in the real world. You know, what we're doing, we have the GDAS runs for 2005, and we're gonna basically use that as our analog and calibrate our OSSI system against that.
Okay.
Using the same data. I mean, you can. What we have done is run our own assimilation with real data. We have all the real data and the programs. We can just run the assimilation with real data, and we can control, you know, what data we use and so on.
Just to clarify here, the data assimilation system used for our OSSI is NCEPS, operational data assimilation system.
Yeah.
So we know exactly how that works in real life. And as Jack said, we want to make sure that it works the same way in the OSSI.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, we want to run it for a month or 2 months or 6 months, and we want to make forecasts, and we want to look at the statistics and fixed observations. We want our OSSI system to behave the same way.
Yes.
You don't have that luxury.
We don't.
So you need to hook up very closely with somebody who does regional data assimilation, because it's too much of a mouthful for you if you have to build your data assimilation system, get some real-world experience with it, and then do OSSIs. I mean, you're going to break your neck on that.
That's not in the time or resource availability.
So NASA has a regional
assimilation? No. NASA doesn't do regional data assimilation.
Actually, the Sports Center, they are hooking up with ESRL or somebody. And again, I need to interact.
Sport is a good route for you. Because they would also be the funnel into operations or whatever if you find something.
What is this?
Sport.
So short-term prediction, now operational research, transition.
Yeah, very good.
So
Gary Jedlovic is really the technical scientific point of contact, and Bill Lepenta is the NASA. But I think Bill has gone on over to more. He's a little bit hands-off, I think.
Yeah, he's management. He's just the guy that I know there.
Yeah.
And also, Georgia picked up all the nature, and she's planning to do regional.
Who's that?
Georgia's Utah University.
Oh, okay, yes.
She's going to do regional analysis.
But that's for the LIDAR.
She's interested in LIDAR. I don't think she's doing very complicated things. She just to use whatever we simulated data.
Yeah, she's an interesting analog because she's, you know, in a way the same situation as you are. She has a lot of ambition and grand ideas, but she does not have the data simulation capability either. And the University of Utah doesn't have that, so she's...
She doesn't have data simulation capability. I think she has data simulation capability, but I don't think she has ability to simulate the data.
I would doubt that she has even the ability to assimilate. I mean, she could do analysis, but what data assimilation system do they have?
GSR.
Installed at the University of Utah.
Well, she may use Hayes or something.
Oh, yeah, if she works it here, but yeah. I mean...
Yeah. You're talking about Zhao Xiu?
Yeah.
Is she running here?
Yeah, Zhao Xiu. Yeah, I mean, she worked here for a couple of years.
That's a while back, though. I mean,
well, it is, but
she worked at NASA for the last at Goddard for the last 6-7 years before she went to if she were to work here, that makes a lot more sense to me because it's not a trivial exercise.
Well, that's what AirSRL is doing too. They're doing, you know, they're working with us here on our computers.
Yeah.
But they have their own GSI system.
They also work on their own, yeah. But they're an institution of a certain critical mass. I mean, Xiao Xiao is a one woman on it.
Yeah, right.
She can't have the data ingest and the global model and the boundary condition and all that. All that.
Well, it depends. I mean, she's designing
she
her own
capable.
Experiments. To fit
or, yes, you can have a couple of canned experiments, but that's not really what I would call data simulation.
No, that's right.
So she's not going to simulate the data, but she knows all inside out.
So our real-world analog would be the Sports Center, whatever they are using, that it's, you need to work more closely with them.
Yeah, and then make a decision on who you partner with on the data simulation, NSEP or SRAL or NCAR, but somebody who does this already on a routine basis, because you don't want to have to build up that whole experience. I mean, it's
a lot of work just porting the system, for that matter.
Yeah, to build it and to get some real life experience, it's a 10-year project. Mm-hmm. You need to leverage off of somebody else's effort and just add to it.
Okay. Yeah, it's better to work with someone who has the same computing system.
That certainly simplifies it. Yeah. I mean, at NASA, we never had that luxury. But,
well, the Sports Center has something similar. I have an account on some other systems that they share.
It might actually be good if we could line it up so that you and I go there at the same time.
Okay. That's awesome.
I mean, I have some other things I need to talk to them about too, but this is this one is pretty important.
Yes, okay. I go there, I have other projects with your aims there, so I make almost monthly visits.
Yeah, okay, so you're not far away from them, so you may have some flexibility there. I may be able to talk to them to simply show them up when I go.
Yes.
How far is it from you?
3.5 hours.
Okay.
So right now, radiation experts are here. If you are interested in simulated radium, these are the people who might be able to help you.
I would like to bail at this point because I have some other things that I need to do, but I think we're done sort of with the...
So our current strategy is on the books, the only viable solution that we have approach is to go ahead with what we have.
I think that I think you need to come up with an experimental design, and it can be along the lines of what we discussed about. But I think it would be good if you would come up with a proposed experimental design, the nature run, the simulation of the observations.
Yes.
The experiments and how you plan to validate it, and then present it in one of Michiko's next meetings, so we could sort of have the whole Aussie group vetted through and blessed. Because that's right. Really missing on the regional, these so-called regional Aussies has been kind of a slippery beast that nobody really knew how to how to do, and I think it would be good if we could get that nailed down once and for all.
So that's why you know, Chris is here tomorrow, so that could be his focus on to come up with his design and talk to the interact.
Oh, if you could do it by Thursday, that would be wonderful.
Well, at least to have a straw man to shoot at.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're going to have...
You feel like you're starting from just stick with the global nature and you feel comfortable?
I feel comfortable. I mean, that's the only concern was when Chris started looking at something else is because there were other feedback from other groups which didn't like.
Well, if it would be good if we could have Tom on the phone on Thursday. So
Tom
Flatter. Usually is on the phone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he will.
So he.
It's important that we can get on the same page.
Yeah.
So about what we're talking about.
He obviously has opinions on this. So the Thursday would be a good forum to discuss.
Yes.
Or Chris to even give him a call tomorrow.
Yeah.
Ahead of the meeting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
To sort of thrash out some kind of experimental design. Yeah.
When's Tom coming here to give his presentation? What is the conclusion for that? His effort. He also presented this. MTG simulation as a mesoscale type of layer. What is the conclusion for that effort?
Well, one conclusion was, again, it was sort of anecdotal. I mean, it was a very short period.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, okay, you know, run some sensitivity with these satellites until they put together a system and it worked. I think it went for a total of a week or something. And that was the sum total of the whole experiment. It wasn't something that scales in a lot of ways into what we're doing.
He has a simulation capability, right? He has the
he
certainly has assimilation capabilities. He's responsible for the for the war development.
I think he demonstrated they can digest things, but they to me, he
major
couldn't.
Ryan is not that.
Well, it was completely anecdotal. It was one case.
He couldn't conclude anything.
It was about, it spanned about a week.
And also,
as I remember,
he had the only cable. She couldn't simulate the radiance data. No. She had to simulate retrieval. The retrieval correlated error of 100 kilometers.
Well, so we thinned it out.
He started from 1 kilometer resolution model with 100 kilometer correlated error.
He basically proved he could run the experiments, but he didn't. Yeah. He didn't do any significant sensitivity tests.
But he did accomplish to present the problem.
Absolutely, it's a proof of concept more than anything.
That's very good.
Yes.
He
put all the pieces together and turned the crank and made it work.
Yeah, and he proved that's not wonderful.
Yeah.
That's great. And first thing he proved is the first retriever that they produced was garbage. So EOCOS has to reprocess using EOS something. That's one thing he
that's
saw.
That's right. ESA used a new retrieval technique.
Yeah, that's right.
Right, but all he still had a problem with the correlated errors.
Yeah,
so he had to end up thinning it down to 100 kilometers or something to get rid of those.
So they want to have such a high resolution nature around 4 kilometers.
Yeah.
This ended up producing 100 kilometer resolution correlated data. That's other things. So, but he showed that. That was important.
He did just enough to uncover some of the problems that you run into. But the work is there, and someone else can pick up on it and expand on it.
He did a very. I liked his work because he pointed out all the problem.
Yeah.
Instead of just cook up some anything. But the satellite people might just see the final result, just running with this way, and then they might start to conclude something else. And one picture will walk by itself. That's the dangerous thing. So,
is this a team attending the team meeting?
He was here for one of them himself, right?
Yeah, he came here and gave presentation, and he called in for the seminar, I think, on Tuesday. I think so. Someone said Enka, didn't sound like a woman, so I thought it was maybe.
Well, he's the head of the data simulation at NCAR, is that right?
He's the new Dale Barker, yeah.
Yeah.
Or will be. I mean, Dale Barker is headed back to the UK right around now, and he was the group leader there.
So who is?
So Hans Wang is the new lead.
But I in the meeting I kept asking him if he's going to continue. Also, he wasn't.
He doesn't know. I mean, he doesn't have AFWA funding to do this, and AFWA is who's paying to do it.
And he said Steve Weigand can do better job or something. So, and when
Steve
I told
Weigand,
him,
that's Ezra.
Yeah.
And when I talked to him in AMS meeting, he is very interested. But he can't do it because he doesn't have funding. So.
No, but remember, we're trying to make this a joint center effort, and the two. There are four agencies in the Joint Center, and the two that are interested right now is NASA and NOAA. But once we get the plans further developed, the plan is to go back to the Air Force and the Navy and say, hey, guys, are you seriously not interested in this? Are you not willing to participate in it at all?
Well,
and if they say, no, now that the ball is rolling, we would like to participate, then they can get Hans back in. I hope that's what's going to happen. But right now, he doesn't have funding to do it.
So he needs Steve Weigand.
No, I mean Hans Wang.
Hans Wang, yeah.
Steve Weigand is different. OAR doesn't have funding either, but they'll let him do it because they're investing in it the same as Steve Lord has been letting you do it, even though he doesn't have dedicated Aussie funds for you either. So that's sort of an internal investment, but the Air Force has not been willing to do that with Hans yet.
NRL is, tell us to all the verification data, and right now only Craig Bishop are interested in just playing around testing FDK.
Yeah.
But
no, we've talked about this in the Joint Center Executive, and Pat Phoebus has said, who is the Navy Deputy Director, she said flat out, we're not interested in this.
Hmm. Why?
Because they don't have money. So this is just Craig's personal interest. This has nothing to do with them.
Yeah.
They are officially not interested.
So if you don't have any data simulation capability while you're learning, you can just simulate the data in high resolution, higher than what Ron Erico does. Then
it is like make this like T511, let the other people to do the trial.
Yeah.
Radiance. So we can
want simulate
doing the validation or whatever. Just see what you simulated.
Because if you have computing capability,
verification is the first step.
Yeah. Well, you need a simulation. You need data simulation.
Yes.
We want to see how
fundamental part of this.
Yeah.
We want to see clouds, we want to see free seed features, all this kind of simulated.
Mm-hmm.
So
the global model, we don't see this.
Right.
To me, for you guys to get into assimilation, it's a lot harder than getting into simulation.
Yes.
The simulation, maybe you can get help from these people.
Right.
You can start to do something that we can make use of your data.
Okay. I apologize. I have to fail at this point. But I will see you. You are here Thursday. You are not.
Right. I'm not here.
You are here. Okay. Very good.
So good seeing you, Mark.
Good seeing you.
We'll iterate over the phone.
Yes.
I get it.
Yes.
Okay. Nice meeting you.
Nice meeting you. Thank you.
So can we talk a little bit about the detail, technical detail?
Yeah.
Thank you. So. These people are here, so...
We work out the simulation.
Yes, simulation. My suggestion is you have some limited time. Easiest thing to getting the call from these people and help them start doing simulation for the whatever you want.
Like Lars said, I mean, we can do... We're set up to do a lot of simulation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can. I'm still not clear what your priorities are here. But it seems to me you have to have a working assimilation system.
Absolutely.
Before you can do anything.
Yes.
And it sounds to me like that's job one.
Right.
It's not going to be a 2 month job.
Huh?
No. It's going.
Well, whatever it is, it needs to be done.
Yeah, but
and I, you know, simulating data is kind of a peripheral thing.
Yes.
In terms of working together, mm-hmm. we can't. You know, you have to put together your assimilation system, mm-hmm. whether you borrow it from somewhere else or however you do that. We can supply simulated data.
Okay. Right.
Simulated data is kind of. That is peripheral to the central, to the core of the experiment.
Mm-hmm.
You need to have an assimilation system. You need to be able to run it with real data and with simulated data,
mm-hmm.
and need to understand what it does,
right?
And how to diagnose what it does, and so on and so forth. Then you can run your experiments. After that, the real data is out there.
Mm-hmm.
The simulated data, can come from a number of places. But it sounds to me like you really need to get your system
right.
That you can put data in one side and you can get results out the other side.
Right.
And you can generate forecasts as diagnostics and so on and so forth.
Right now the data simulation capabilities are very limited to what comes with WARF. So we don't have a system like GSI or something which
WARF is
it has 3D WAR. I guess they're going to have 4D WAR also.
Yeah, I mean that's a. I mean, but if that's the system you're going to use for your experiments, then that's a system that you need to run.
Right. Now the question is that adequate, or should we try to have a capability which is similar to the operational centers? So, from the project point of view, the project management responses probably are not going to be too particular. But from the other, the community point of view, it may be more pertinent to consider like GSI or something what the sports center is using. I know they have been using labs and they're getting away from it.
Mm-hmm. Well, as far as I know, that code's all available. It's all sort of public domain stuff.
Right.
I mean, if that's what you want to use, you should
get
it.
Right. We could do that. So that's one of the things we need to coordinate with the NASA Sports Center.
Yeah.
Because they are the point of contact. Because we don't have a direct contact with the local forecasting office. We could, but then it'll be duplicated. I mean,
the forecasting office, they don't have these codes. I mean,
The two of the Miami and Huntsville offices are depending upon the NASA Sports Center to do it for them. They're co-located with, Lars probably didn't mention that. NASA Sports Center is in the same buildings, co-located with the National Weather Service office in Huntsville.
I see.
So, forecast office is in the fourth floor and Sports Center is in the third floor. So, and they interact on a daily basis.
Okay, but what's their interest? I mean, the Sports Center is...
Short-term weather prediction for regional.
Right, but they tie, for instance, into, you know, Suitland here for the NOM and the GSI, right? I mean, what kind of systems are they running?
Running WARF, I think they were using labs and WARF.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what... But they were moving away from labs to something more compatible with the Weather Service.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I need to get an update on it. This information is...
Well, in some sense, simulation is sort of a black box. I mean, once you hook it up and make it work,
yes,
that's the meat grinder,
right?
Basically. And you know, but you need to get one
hooked
up
and
make
it
work.
More routinely.
One that you want to do the experiments with.
Yes.
And then it's a matter of just putting, pouring the data in.
Absolutely.
And understanding what happens.
Yes.
So, like I say, the data itself is almost a peripheral issue.
Right.
I mean, it's another whole world in and of itself.
Absolutely.
But it's not a world you have to get too involved with. The data is out there.
So you're not testing the assimilation system. That's not what you're interested in. You're just interested in what data you're using.
They're working with mesoscale systems, high resolution area. High resolution models run over the Gulf of Mexico. So they want to set up systems where they can test, let's say, CRIS data, if that's going to help them, predict hurricanes or.
Right.
Predict, severe storms in the Gulf or something.
Now, NSEP is doing this 4-kilometer experimental domains. There's four or five domains. Is there any data assimilation going into that, those high-resolution ones?
Well, there's data assimilation. I don't know what they use to initialize them.
Okay.
I mean, probably the NAM. The high-resolution data assimilation that I know about is the NAM, or the North American model.
But that's the NAM WARF is what's generally available is the 12-kilometer, but they also have this 4-kilometer Windows. Now.
Yeah, I don't know what kind of experiments they're doing with that.
So I mean,
I think tomorrow, I'm suggesting here to go to Cherry Blossom Festival, but between that you can meet the mesoscale guy, so you can find out. That's something.
Greg or Tom Black or
I think anyone.
Yeah. Somebody in the mesoscale branch.
Yeah. So it would be good to talk.
Yeah,
to
you could probably get more information out of them than out of us.
Well,
subject.
That's very hard to find anything on the web or anything about this 4-kilometer windows that they're doing. So you know that it's probably coming out of some NAM WARF.
Yeah, but it's all research at this point.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the current status is just the mesoscale forecast using mesoscale model is worse than global model.
Yes.
They're not doing that
way. So using the global model, your mesoscale forecast is actually better than using a mesoscale model?
Yeah, I think the mesoscale data simulation, instead of using start from global simulation, is better. There was a one seminar,
So, Chris, it'll be good for you to talk to somebody about, you know, what is the current strategy and future directions, and then we can probably adapt our strategy to that in order for it to be useful in an operational sense.
I do think it's important, though, that you do need to start somewhere.
Right.
It's not going to be, if it's not the state of the art, you know, if it's a couple steps behind, I don't think that's completely relevant. It's important to have experience working with those systems, how how they operate, and they can be upgraded.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, they're sort of modular. I mean,
yes.
Once you get one working and understand how it works, it's much easier to put an upgrade on it than it is to figure it out from scratch.
Right.
I mean, my experience is that, you know, really you learn a lot just putting a system together end to end.
Mm-hmm.
And understanding what it does. You really learn a lot, even if it's not the latest or greatest system.
Yes. So once we have that, whatever the equivalent of that, then we have to come back to this point of this. So we'll try to gain some experience, certainly by running real-world day-to-day.
Yeah. Once you run a real-world case in your system, it's easy to put the, you know, to put the perfect world together there. And alongside of it, and then you can start, you know, calibrating your system and convincing yourself that it's working a lot like the real world. Once you do that, then you can run sensitivity tests that are maybe persuasive.
Now, what would you mean by calibrating our system?
Calibrating, I mean, is okay. Let's say you have a real world system. That's your baseline.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and it generates statistics.
Yes.
You know, your simulation. Your simulation is diagnosed by comparing it to the observations that
create the standard verification.
Yeah, the fits.
Yes.
Forecasts. You can make forecasts. You know, from the initial conditions it generates. You can look at the skill of those forecasts over whatever time range you're interested in, and that sort of describes that system. And you want your OSSI system to basically produce this very similar results, to act the same way. It's not in the same world, but you want the statistics to be very similar. Mm-hmm. You want the fits to the simulated observations to be comparable. And you want the forecast skills to be comparable.
So
then once that, you know, then your system is calibrated. In other words, it acts like the one in the real world by all the measures you can make. Then when you introduce some new data source that you want to evaluate sensitivity to, your results are more credible because you can show that your OSSI behaves like your system in the real world, and that when you put this speculative data, Chris isn't up there, so you can't run real world experiments with it. But if you can demonstrate that in every other respect your OSSI behaves like the real world, when you simulate Chris data and you run sensitivity, you can make the case that, hey, you know, these are believable results.
Okay.
That's the whole point.
Sure. You know, that's one way in an operational context, but when we are going into the mesoscale runs and we are stepping into territory, even the weather service doesn't have experience with.
Right.
So the current verification statistics may not tell the whole story.
Mm. Well, it depends on what verification you're looking at.
Right.
Again, that's why I say if you have a system in-house that you can run with real data and generate statistics from, and then your OSSI is calibrated to it, you know, again, you have to calibrate your OSSI to something. You cannot calibrate it to a system that's nothing like it.
Right.
You have to calibrate it to a system that's really analogous to it.
So if you start from learning about data simulation, looking for data simulation system you can use, I don't know what your time frame is.
But we have, you know, the experience with WARF, 3D WARF. Is that going to be enough? I mean, that's not exactly what the Weather Service is using, or that's pretty much used by the research community. Yeah. So it is, the experience is purely.
But there's nothing wrong with that.
Yes.
I mean, if you,
so
you
maybe
that,
we have to use just only that.
Make an OSSI system that is generated off of that, and calibrate.
So do you have CRTM?
We don't.
The WARF has a CRTM.
Okay,
the WARF simulation.
So if it has that, then...
The WRF is like a, isn't it a regional model that's a couple of years old?
I'm actually not too
pretty sure that's what it is. No? I'm pretty sure it's, you know, they started, the WRF is kind of a system that was created for the community.
Yes.
And but it doesn't necessarily keep up with operations. So it was, it's a system that developed out of what was operational a couple of years ago. 5 years ago.
Actually, it was done. The history is that it's pretty much a brand new model. Mm. Now, there is an ARW code that's advanced weather research, whatever that code. That dynamical code comes from the NCAR and the WAF community. Now, in order for NCAR to be used, NCAR brought in their NAN.
Right. There's a WRF version of the NAN.
Right.
Yeah, right.
So WRF there are sort two dynamical cores, yeah. And obviously, you know, the data simulation.
But you could assemble. You could assemble a WRF version of the
exactly.
NAN.
Exactly. Right.
So you can do the global analysis as well.
No.
Because you have.
Well, there's a global WRF. I mean,
that's
a whole other.
Yeah, that's a.
You're not interested in that anyway.
Well, that's what we put in, but you know, there's a lot of uncertainties and risks there, and it's not going to bring us anything from what the discussion so far. It's not giving us any advantages. In fact, it could be a disadvantage.
So you can pretty much, if we have the global analysis, then we give the data. You can pretty much run the regional analysis.
Yes. That's I mean, what you mean by global analysis is. Are you talking about the standard?
Michiko's talking about the data, the observations, not the analysis.
Or the observations.
Yeah.
Yes. That's.
So if we give you the data, you can start from that.
Right. Now, WAF, there are some engineering things that we may need to do to get it wired up right. But essentially,
But I mean, that's in our world here.
Yes.
The same observations go into the global system and the regional system.
So that's something someone is doing, so there must be technique.
Oh, yes.
On DSI.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Oh, right. The data interface, exactly. They use the prep buffer files.
Yes.
Yeah.
The buffer and group files with the unserved.
Exactly.
Yes.
So you can do that.
Yes.
Then you are interested in simulating
we need to
ATMs and CRIS, right?
Yes. So we need to replace the real observations with... Every day.
Yeah.
Okay, so you already have that. Okay. Now, is that thin? I mean, that problem that you talked about, are you generating only a selected...
Well, you're generating from...
We generate from the AVN data set.
From PGBs or something? Or
yeah, from the AVN.
So we can supply, you know, the PGBs of interest.
Okay.
And crank it through your code.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, we have to, it has to be at a certain time. It can't just be today's.
But
we can't just use what you did today. We have to, you know...
See.
We use AVN like a forecaster data. We also can use like a GDAS thing.
Yeah. Right. Well, we can supply the files. Yeah. No question about it. But they might be from 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
So you can, you can simulate from nature on data by just changing few parameters.
But if we need to change the natural data, we just need to change the input.
Input, just the
right. But we can make the nature run data look like the data that is ingested now.
Then we lose some information.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, you know, RIB files can have higher resolution. It depends on how flexible the program is, how much work you need to do.
Usually input data, how many, 32 level, 40 level?
91.
I'm pretty sure because for the AVN data is just 92 levels.
Yeah.
For GDAS is like a unless
like
you can get
30.
64.
So,
right.
Yeah.
64.
So you start from model level.
Yeah, model level.
NSET model level is different from nature model. So
but you can just those are
Just import it.
Right.
It gives
economy, like the different like import data can be stream.
Yeah.
Change the import data gathered.
Right, right. So just a little part of the program.
So your program works on which machine are you using?
I find is the simulations in, you know, we just provide simulation data in our group because we need the simulation data for some for other purposes, you know. So, mm-hmm.
So you use Linux or SGI or which machine do you use?
It's the IBM machines.
Oh.
Unix machines. It's not in the SF machine now. It's,
so it's a,
because I have to keep using like a, if to keep to if I have to generate like a real new rare near real time, I have to use like keep I have to keep use like a 6 or at least a 4 CPU. So I cannot use a computer use.
So you're using IBM.
Yeah,
I use
that.
Same kind of machine.
Nessus machines.
So
you can move the Linux cluster?
Sure. I can move to the SF machine.
No, 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 Linux, that's a whole other story. Yeah.
I mean, I can use
the SF. No, I mean, you know, we can, if there's a number of issues here. If you need CRIS data, mm-hmm. say high-resolution CRIS data, and there's a program at NASDAQ that generates it, I mean, I think we can probably work it out so that they can generate give it to you. But if you want the program that does it, I mean, that's much more complicated.
No, we just need the data.
That's the thing. We could all help each other out here.
Right.
You know, we can work at home and sort of share, you know, the products.
Yes.
And that helps us all.
Right. So we would need basically the simulated observations as well as the simulated ATMS. I mean, whatever is assimilated into the.
So you are not going to simulate the data. That's what the.
No. So that's why I think we can work together, and you know, that's why the funding that we had for last period can be redirected too. So we have a little bit of money there. We can. So that we had to work it out, and I. Didn't have a chance to talk to Lars about it.
So far, ATM the Chris is not on the plan to be simulated. Right?
But he is simulating it now.
But he's working for Frontier.
Oh, he's with what?
Using CRTM.
He's not, because he can do spare time. So he's not fond of the research.
Okay.
He's just
Chris
or ATM.
Okay, but the capability is there, right?
That's the point. I
yes,
think, you know, capability.
Capability is there.
We don't have to keep reinventing wheels.
Yes.
So
we can make the case that if the wheel is there, we should be able to use it.
Right.
So if you have computer time and resource, you can get program from them, and also.
We should focus on what the most cost-effective technique, you know, way to get, you know, what we need.
Or you can request money to support his work.
That would be cheaper.
That's the problem. You know, you're just supposing on that.
Because he's overwanted, you know. His need exceeds 100%.
Well, we'll talk to Lars Peter about that.
Right. I mean, it can't come out of Hei Bing's hide. This is just a matter of, you know, connecting the resources.
Yes.
And the consumers.
Right.
Yeah.
It should be a simple problem.
Yes.
And I think Lars and other people are committed to making it a simple problem. That's what we need to do.
So there's another person, student, is coming and. She doesn't know anything about the large-scale computing or anything, but just running, submitting existing code or something set up is a good start.
She's coming here?
For
the summer?
No, initially 1 year. So
a postdoc or something?
No, student.
Part-time,
a PhD
intern.
PhD student,
okay.
So she ran the code and she ran the system and she wanted to write PhD.
This is not Orestes' student?
No.
No, some other student.
he's from China. So if you can form a second year or something, that's a possibility. It may be cheaper than funding.
Well, for the time frame of the project, then you know, we don't have a three-year fund. So we need to, that's why I'll have to talk to Lord Spira. There's money there, but it needs to be spent in a certain time, otherwise it'll disappear. So, but we want to spend it wisely where, you know, where we need the resources and expertise from. I mean, we have the resources, but wherever the expertise we can get. So I'll discuss with him, and as a lot of times agencies do internal trading, so.
Yeah, right.
So that's what we've done with NASA, and sometimes they can take the money, they may put it here, and then next year realize it internally, so that's how they work it out, it's the management level.
Yeah.
So as long as right now the capability is there, it doesn't need to be reinvented. It is most efficient for you to generate, produce the simulated data than us to get the code and do it, even though we can do it.
But simulation side, you have to find a form, even if it's done here.
Right.
So maybe Haibin can help to set up the
But once it's set up, it's automated. I guess we have the nature on that. It just run it through and let the computer produce that, I suppose.
Unless you have to get the computer from the our group. That's not the issue.
Oh, your group? Okay.
Babysitting is other sometimes.
Do you guys save the data? We can generate anything every day, right?
How intensive is it to, say, use the nature run to produce that? I mean, is it really computationally that intensive once you know the footprint? So.
If something goes wrong.
I don't your question.
Is it really computationally intensive for you to?
Sure, you can say that.
But well, we're not doing globally, we are just looking at a small window.
It's relatively easy. But for the small window, either. So, just to add some words, because when we're talking about the resolution, you're just talking about the high resolution. But the resolution, for the resolution, it's bound by the two factors. One is the instrument itself.
Yes.
Another is input data.
Input data,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, divided by two. Okay.
Yes.
Even you get like a high resolution, like a focus data, mm-hmm. but the instrument is zero.
Right.
The resolution is already be defined. So
yes.
If we just do simulation the resolution according to the instrument, maybe just it's very quick, don't need too much time.
Okay. So yeah, it's however you do that, it's just that the nature run, that's the other one, is whether I assume that we simulate the observations and ATMS from the nature, ECMW of nature run, not the intermediate one that we run. Because this is what we,
yeah,
we don't want to use the degraded one.
Well, I think you want to design your experiment. It would be good to design the experiment to be able to do that.
Yes.
I mean, part of the efficiency that you might get by tying into the network is to design
right.
the experiments to be able to do that.
Right. So it will be based on the nature run. And which group are you? Which one then?
NESDES,
okay. So I don't know how it works between your groups.
So yeah, we're across the street from each other.
can be a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, NESDES is all about, ingesting the satellite
yes.
feeds and creating data for the models, and that's our connection, basically.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, there is another connection. NESDES, I think NCDC is in the same park as NESDES.
Okay.
That's the same part of NOAA. And so and so there's this kind of three-way dynamic between they archive stuff, and as this
yes.
you know, generates and processes all this satellite stuff, and then the weather service interacts with both. We take the satellite,
okay.
produce the simulations, then we send everything down to NCDC. And weather service, I guess, is also receipts all the rest of the data, you know, the conventional data and stuff comes through the weather service. And everything eventually goes to NCDC.
Right.
That kind of thing going on.
I might not have mentioned earlier, and we are also, actually, Chris is actually part of a NOAA cooperative institute called the Northern Gulf Institute. So that's a direct note, even though this particular task is funded by NASA, but its major employer is this joint institute with NOAA. So mm-hmm. he's a NOAA CI person, whereas I'm purely university. I mean, that's also through the university, but.
Right, yeah, right, right. So.
Comparable to the series or CIRA in mm-hmm. Colorado. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, does the new person, the student, she is hosted by Hu Zhong when he was sitting there. So you have to talk to him.
Okay.
So that's one. Because if you are funded by NASA, another possibility is if you can get NASA resources working. Instead of bringing the system into your system, if they allow, you can get login to account.
It sounds like they have quite a lot of computers down there.
Yeah.
Oh, we have that. Computing is not a problem.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you want to run as much as you can down there. It's
we
just
can.
A matter of
yes.
building your system up.
Yes, we have another person who works with Chris who could probably come here and be trained on to use the code. And
yeah.
Just he can come and sit here for a week or so and then learn how to do it. So.
Our problem is our computer is saturated.
Yes.
You turn around and just devastate. So if you can download the data and if you can make his code working on your side, that may be possible.
Okay. That's, we could consider that. Our computer is at 95% utilization, but on a high priority project, we can go to the director and then we can say, we can bump up the priority on it. And we can tell the director and say, this is important, because there are some as university type research experimental. So they are generally a lower priority, unfunded.
But
when we have a funded project, we can always bump up the priority.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you have a lot of computers.
Yes.
It's just a matter of getting, building
yes.
the system,
yes.
putting the system together and building it up. And, you can use pieces that have already been built other places, but it's still a matter of porting them down there and getting them work.
So is it, if we have to send a person to train to use the code, in case we... we want to do that. Is that still a viable option? Do we have to go to Nestis to get permission for the?
Well, if you want to get Hey Bing's time,
yes.
you're going to have to deal
have
with his boss.
Yes. my suggestion is that NASA has a Linux cluster. So if you try to talk to both NASA and here, so if you have trouble and you're running on IBM, and make sure it's run on Linux cluster here.
Yes.
So. I think you gave your script and code to Roomfa, and Roomfa is running on Linux cluster, right? Yeah, CRT.
I'm not sure what.
I'm not sure what they have. I'm not sure if it's Linux cluster or not.
I think that they have Linux cluster.
Well.
So, if you, to me, I'd say if you get account, contact here, and there. So if you try out here and moving to there, try out net local test. Well, if you work at NASA, you can bring it to your place. It should be easy.
Well, from here we can transfer it to our system too. So it's all the same.
It might work as well.
So why go through even NASA?
Absolutely,
because
they have
the
most direct route. That's the important thing.
Right, we can avoid.
If you have computers to use, there's programs and. Systems to put on.
Yes.
It's just a matter of putting them together.
Right.
So you don't find much trouble between IBM and Linux cluster?
No. I mean, there's trouble, and it's been dealt with.
Okay.
I mean, we've been dealing with that trouble for like 10 years now.
So you know mm-hmm. what? The
That's right. So yeah. The trouble is pretty much worked out. All of our programs work on Linux.
Most of the trouble is to turn off optimization.
that's exactly right.
So half the troubles go away.
Right, that's right.
Because the compilers are different. So
maybe you can get something and maybe take with you and start.
Yeah, so you can get the data and...
Yeah, you need to focus on what's... what you can put together
in the most direct way.
Yes.
I mean, you need the assimilation system. That's what that's your job one. I mean, if you, I'm not quite sure where you're at with that. But you need a system that you can run and that you can understand,
right.
You can diagnose and see what it does.
We currently don't have operational experience with running with the assimilation
right.
system.
Right, so that's why
it's
I say that's job one.
Right.
That's your primary
yes.
need. You know, your primary focus right now should be getting that, building that expertise, building that system and making it work. Because that's the core of your experiment, what you want to do.
Yes.
Involves this assimilation system and operating it. Everything else is peripheral to that. Everything else is inputs or outputs.
Right. But at the same time, I should also point out that Chris's group, before Chris came, they have two people there who have run producing operational system from a private company.
Yeah.
Without data assimilation, just using 4DDA from old MM5 core apps. So that's just a... They have experience doing operational runs.
Uh-huh. Initializing a model.
Initializing, cycling,
and running
it, everything.
So a simulation system
so they
is
have
one step
one
beyond
One step
that.
Beyond, right.
Right.
So they just need to
I'm
come
sure
up
you've
with,
got
the
yes. people,
yeah,
I'm sure
we
you've
have
got expertise that can do this.
Right.
It's just a matter of putting those pieces together in a straightforward way.
Yes.
To build what you need.
Right. So that thing which they did, they still run it for this company called Whirlwind, so it's producing commercial products mostly for the marine community, so
right.
It's pretty robust system they have put together.
Yeah.
Just have to duplicate something similar within a simulation system. That's
yeah.
what we need.
Yeah. Once you do that, you'll have a much better idea.
Yes.
Of how what your OSI actually is going to look like, because it's going to be an analog to that.
Mm-hmm.
However that works, that's how your OSI needs to work, and the pieces that make your OSI, the nature on where it goes. And so on and so forth will all be, I think, apparent
yeah.
at that point.
Okay. So I guess Chris has to talk to you to meet with the right people tomorrow as well as on Thursday.
So you want me to reach another group here, but probably you have everything you need?
Well, I guess the first question is, you know, what do you want to discuss? You know, what questions do you have, and then we can talk about answering them.
Do you think? So, do you want to try out their code and script? Do you think they can look at your code or script?
Or maybe
no,
just
I
walk
my code. I cannot simulate the lens Chris.
Because you use CRT.
CRT.
CRT is dependent.
So, what do you use for simulating Chris in ATMS?
Similar to SADA. It's from.
Okay.
It's come from the company or?
It's from UMBC.
Okay.
The RTM mode, just the RTM mode is.
Does the code have a specific name to it? Is there any designation? Is there any specific name to the code that you're using?
In fact, for different instrument,
mm-hmm.
the only difference is like a coefficient file, data file.
Okay.
The program.
The data set is, you know, for different instrument, some guy just generated different
yes.
data set for it.
Uh-huh.
So we just use the data set. We just use different data set for different instruments.
Right. Okay. So you basically run. What is the forward model that you use once you say from the nature run to be able to propagate?
It's the RTM mode is from UMBC.
Okay, that's a UMB. It's not
CRT.
CRT.
It's called SARDA.
Yes.
S A R D A.
Yeah. You can
okay.
say it's SARDA.
But SARDA is mainly they just talk about AS and then maybe.
You
please
can
add different
data into it.
You could simulate
okay.
for anything as long as you parameterize. I mean, basically what you're talking about is it's IR mostly, or you can do microwave too?
Sure.
So it's basically
okay,
you just
yes.
have to specify the frequencies
right.
that you're modeling.
Yeah. So once you get that, then the instrument characteristics.
We have a simulation of the instrument characteristics, like
footprint navigation or the footprint size or pattern or
all integrated into it.
Yeah, and integrate and you got a simulation and integrate into like a one observation. That's
okay.
What you do. You have to when you do the simulation, you have to simulate the like a scan mirrors kind of pattern.
Yes.
Scan for integration term difference. All yeah. Those things.
So all those things for already built in now for.
Yeah, we can simulate a lot of yeah. Different instruments.
Yeah. ATMS.
ATMS.
Yeah.
And
FRIS. Yeah. Now, one of the other things is that in an ASI, this a lot of the simulations also assume some ground properties like vegetation properties, you know, water content, emissivity, etc. So, do we need to be consistent with that also in that mesoscale model because they also use the same parameters?
So
what if there is a mismatch between what you use for the simulated radiances versus the model?
Yeah, there's a lot of detail inside it, in fact.
Well, I'll say this. I mean, there's differences between the model, inconsistencies between any model
yes.
And the real world.
So we did
so
this may be a good thing, in fact. I mean,
yeah,
this is
I'm saying,
social.
You know, it's
yeah.
The inconsistency is not necessarily bad because
yes.
Remember, we're always working in an imperfect world.
Right.
So any differences between your imperfect world and whatever you think
yes.
The perfect world is
it's,
is realistic.
It's yeah.
As
it's
long as
thing.
Those differences
right.
Are plausible.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
From an ASI context, that's
right.
Okay.
Right.
We may not want them matched.
Yeah,
well, you can't have them matched.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Okay.
So Harbin, do you think it's possible if they pay, if they talk to your boss and you might be paid to do the?
Maybe the best way is that you know it's you, you know, or you talk to like a Mitch to get the permission, you know, for those things.
Are you willing to do it before I ask?
But for me, it's easy. No, it's not a big problem.
He's not willing to do it for free.
Yeah,
I can say that.
So I don't. Mean
sure, money is good, but money is not everything. Right?
Money's not everything, but
if he said
don't say you'll do it for free.
He said, well, that's his interest. Just go ahead and do it. I don't know.
That's entirely up to Lars Peter. That portion.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Lars so. Can figure that out.
Yes.
I mean, that's
so
he,
let's
that's
not
his
worry
job.
About it.
Figure
yes.
Out how to put
that's
these
the,
pieces together.
That's not, be, you know, I cannot give the answer. You know,
yeah.
It's not me. You know.
So there are two possibilities: you get the nature
yes.
Run and simulate yourself,
right.
And find some resource to let him do it, or you.
See, the good thing is you can work on parallel tracks.
Yes.
You can focus on what you really need to focus on. You need a core system. That's what
right.
You need.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
With you know, before you have anything else, you need an assimilation system.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the peripheral stuff, you can get these programs. You can there's probably 50 different programs
mm-hmm.
to simulate satellite radiances.
Right.
There's, you know, And you can plan on getting those, but again, there's a matter of priorities.
Yes.
There's an order of work that you have to employ that makes sense in your situation.
Right.
Putting together the simulation system is absolutely the highest priority because without that you can't do anything else.
Yes.
Yeah.
The rest of the stuff, you know, you can take advantage of work that other people have done
mm-hmm.
without a problem. I mean, in terms of data.
Mm-hmm.
The data is there and is available. Simulated data and real data is all available. I mean, there's no doubt about that
mm-hmm.
for checking out your system, for developing your system. When you want to simulate data, when you have the resources to do that, then you go get the programs and build that capability.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of, you know, again,
mm-hmm.
the order of work that makes sense for what you want.
So one of the things that Chris could do tomorrow is if you can talk to somebody who's doing that, who can give some more insight into how they're doing the 4 kilometer windows. It's not absolutely essential. Just to have an idea of how it is done, then take our system and somehow,
mm-hmm.
as much as
mm-hmm.
possible, try to
see if you can tie into that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So what?
I don't know who that is, actually.
Yeah.
I don't know who's working on that project, but I mean...
Tom is a modeler.
Yeah.
Eric might know. Eric might be involved.
It's a whole lot tricky.
But he's an operation.
What he's actually doing is usually a very tricky question.
Yeah. Jim might be able to help you figure out.
Yeah. We can find out.
So it's not absolutely essential, but it's helpful to know, and that way then we'll be able to say
it sounds like their main interest, Chris's main interest, would be the mesoscale assimilation system.
Yeah.
And the research versions.
Yeah.
And then try to maybe elaborate a little more on this approach. Right now that's the only viable thing which we have, and talk to also Tom Schlatter and just bounce it off him and see what he has to say.
Again, like I say, I really think you need to know how your assimilation system works in the real world. Once you have that, you know, what kind of boundary conditions, what kind of nested domains and everything
yes.
else, once you have that, once that's well defined, the Aussie becomes, you know, how you do an Aussie becomes much more apparent.
Right. In fact,
so
they have one.
You don't know what it's, you are running, right? Or something.
Yeah, but we do it on a case study basis. We don't do
oh,
it
okay.
like an operation.
No assimilation system. See.
But we do assimilation, but for case studies.
Okay.
So we just do that for 24 hour or 36. So that's not exactly the same way it is done operationally.
Okay.
So maybe we can, the window can be even the southeast window that operationally done, the 4 kilometer window that we could do, and then it'll just match exactly what is done operate. It's not necessary, but that's one step toward.
So three of you
yeah.
are all
yeah.
working on data simulation. Or I just wonder if you work.
I'm managing projects. I have 11 projects. So each project hardly gets 10% of my time. This last year I counted, I had 11 projects.
Oh, okay.
I have direct responsibility for. So this
so
year it
will
come down to
6. Are you the one who is actually running the data simulation system?
So Chris has, yes. Pat Deuce, you know, he has more of an expertise on the atmospheric side, and Chris is the one who will have primary responsibility for the whole thing, technical responsibility.
So
then he has, we can bring in another person to support Chris. He is the one who did that for the private company, doing that 4DBA system,
mm-hmm.
operational system.
Mm-hmm. No. Right. Well, your Aussie is
yeah.
always going to be modeled on some sort of real-world system.
Yes.
So whatever it is, whatever sensitivity that
yes.
you want to demonstrate or evaluate is always in the context of, you know, some system in the real world.
Right.
So, I mean, you could make an Aussie for your... You know, for what you have now, if that's
yeah.
if that's relevant, if that's what you want to do.
So, I think that's the idea Chris probably had, just to look at case studies of two events.
Mm-hmm.
But that's purely from, it doesn't help the operations, it's just purely a research.
Yeah, and the problem is that, you know, case studies are anecdotal.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's how far those results go.
Yeah.
You can say, you know, in this case, in this particular case, on this particular day, with this particular data, this happened. That really doesn't mean much in over.
Right. We don't have the statistics.
That's as far as that goes. It's
yes.
It could, you know, in a lot of ways, you don't know why, in many cases, why that would happen.
That would be interesting from a research point of view, but we want to make it operationally relevant. So.
Yeah.
That's
and then that would include a sort of a longer
yes.
time period, a
that's
season
why.
Or something.
Yeah.
And then you can say over a season,
mm-hmm.
on average, this because it's very hard to make a case in anecdotal terms for
right.
Why we should spend $50 billion for a satellite
yeah.
based on one day.
Yes, sure.
That's not even in the future.
Right.
I mean, if it's the right day and it's in the future, it may be worth it, right? But
yeah.
But case studies are never about the future. So.
There's interesting things we can learn. I mean, this group, Pat did, I mean, they did an interesting study in simulating Hurricane Lily, which fell apart, which is a good thing in real life situation, but nobody knew why,
mm-hmm.
because it was not forecast. But by doing assimilation, they were able to say where you are and say that it's because of dry air intrusion, which showed up in the model, which didn't show up otherwise. It didn't show up in any of the operational models. But when you go back and do the case study, you understood.
Very valuable, but I'm not sure OSSEs are the best way to really learn anything new.
Yes.
In regard to real cases.
Yeah. That's good advice. So we have to plan on running it for a longer duration.
Yeah.
Preferably a season, as you said.
Right, and that's...
Then, yeah.
It's not such a big leap from where you are, I think. It just sounds like you need a few extra pieces and...
Yeah.
And some testing and so on and so forth until you think it's working right.
Yeah.
And then build it, and then you basically have the core of your OSSE. Then it's just a matter of getting the simulated data, which, like I say, a lot of it's already been created for this nature run.
Yeah.
And also simulating it yourself is not that big a deal once you have a system that can use it. So
yeah.
I gotta go.
Okay. So
we really appreciate the time.
Thank you.
It's a great discussion.
Yeah.
I will sort of talk to Ras Peter and if you can spend time to setting things up for the.
Yeah.
Ras Peter.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. And then I can give you any answer. You know. And I got a video from him.
Number crunching and babysitting the student, or. If it's necessary, you may have to get the account and babysitting, but that possibility, right? I can. Thank you very much.
Yes. Okay, say bye.
Yeah.
That's
bye. Okay, thank you. So, Mishka, we can't thank you enough for organizing this and getting people together.
Yeah.